second monthly meeting of the Port of Port Townsend for Wednesday, March the 25th. Call it to order. We'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okey dokey. So we have, the first order is to approve the agenda. Do we have any additions or corrections?
Yes, under first reading, we need to add another lease, New Day. We had sent them a draft lease quite a number of months ago, and they just brought it in yesterday. So we've been on month to month. So I'd like to do the first reading and then vote on it next meeting.
Okay, are there any other additions? Okay, so I've moved to approve the agenda with that one addition.
Second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Consent agenda. I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I second.
Have you looked at it?
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor? No.
Yeah.
I was waiting for another second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Public comments not related to the agenda. Do we have any comments tonight that are off the wall?
You didn't quite mean it that way.
Qualifier.
Okay.
Steve, I'm sorry.
Yes.
You guys have a great financial statement, and I was trying to understand some of the statistics that you keep track of. And on the page that has the monthly occupancy report, it seems like there's just a huge number of people signed up to get mortgage, but yet there's still a few places left. And I just wanted to ask, the people that are on the waiting list, is that a real number that is accurate, not just made up? I mean, on the first page it has like this was as of March 5th, 2015, it showed 164 on the wait list.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really 165
yeah.
folks?
Yeah, let me explain. Well, maybe we should let someone more eloquent than me explain. What the problem is that when someone vacates a slip, so it shows there's a vacant slip on the numbers of slips we have occupied,
right.
Then they start to contact the people on the wait list. They contact the first person, and surprisingly enough, the first person doesn't always take it. So then they go to the second person, then the third person, and sometimes people are on this wait list because they want to have a slip that is in the wind or a different spot or something. So they'll have to go through more than one person often to be able to get someone that'll actually take it. And let's see, who can explain?
You know, the other thing is, you know, we get a lot of snowbirds that, you know, if you call them, they don't return their call right away. So there's always kind of a delay in sorting that out.
Right.
But I think you're right. A lot of people want they want to be on the new AV dock. They don't want the commercial basin because of the noise and that sort of thing. So there's various factors. So we started charging people to be on the wait list to kind of give it some legitimacy,
right.
If that makes sense.
Right.
Because when I first got here, we had an enormous number of people on the wait list. But when I talked to Port Angeles and Port of Edmonds and Bellingham, they all had these huge wait lists. So we all started charging to be on the wait list, and the wait list all, because people were just getting their name on everybody's wait list.
Oh, right.
Because
okay.
It didn't cost them anything. So I think it's pretty legitimate.
Well, keep in mind that 97% occupancy is pretty good. Because
okay.
We're a working port, we need spaces for the boats coming in to be worked on.
Right.
So if we had 100% occupancy, all
that
these
would
people,
you.
We wouldn't be able
right.
to
right.
start
affecting the marine trades and everything else.
But I didn't really understand that. I've noticed it's always around 140, 160, so I mean, that's a huge number of people that are trying to.
And if you, I think Port of Port Angeles, last time I checked, they're about 30% vacant. They have no wait list, so. But I would contend that we're a far more desirable community than a lot of other marinas.
Right. Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, any other public comments not related to the agenda? Well, then we'll just dive right into the agenda. The second reading, the engineer applications?
We advertise in the paper, and the period for applications to be submitted is closed. We end up receiving two applications. Both on paper appear to be very well qualified. Eric was in the process of setting up the interviews for next week. So we'll go through the interview and pick one of them. And then we'll sit down with whoever we select and get going on our capital facilities plan. So that's really all there is. Just want to let you know that we've got the names and moving forward. One is local, Port Townsend, and the other one lives in Polesbo, which is still kind of local. So.
Have we worked with either of them before?
We know them both. And they're both civil / structural engineers. So that's what we wanted.
These guys are tired?
Semi. Which is kind of good because it gives them the flexibility to respond to our needs. So.
Do we anticipate, is Pike playing a role in this at all? Does he like?
Not really. He's not an engineer. He's not especially a structural engineer. You know, we use Tite for our project management. You know, when he built a new lift pier, he'll be with us in September for the boat ramp expansion, that sort of thing. This was really a different animal than what Tite is capable of doing.
Tite does work with one of the gentlemen that applied out.
They know the guy.
Yeah.
I was thinking more like just bird dogging him as far as showing him around and stuff.
Well, that's going to be, I asked Larry Ozzie to kind of come up with a facility-by-facility punch list of things that he's concerned about, and Jim and I will probably add to that. And then we're all going to physically take, Larry Ozzie, Jim and I, and Eric is asked to go along too, and take him around to each of the facilities and then kind of say, okay, come back in 2 months and let us know what you think. So.
And well, along the lines of what Pete said, Tyke ends up working with these structural engineers way more than us, and so he might have some good insight if he's involved in the selection process or something. I'm not sure. How is the selection process?
Keep in mind, we've got 15 years experience working with engineers, too.
Right, I understand that. But I mean, Tyke is...
Tyke is good, but we know what we're doing.
So... How is the selection process going to work? Is it going to be interviewed with you?
I'm going to interview them and pick one. Larry Oz is going to sit in on it, Jim and Eric and I will.
Cool. Yeah. Good. Okay, so that's all the first, second readings. The first reading, so this is going to be discussion only. We're going to be talking about the Baird Boat Company additional ground lease.
Jim. Well, up front, Ernie is sitting here, and it's great that he's here to answer any questions. This is a prime example of something that you would consider immediate action would be good. We've got some information for you, but it is the first reading of this. We've been working with Haven Boat Works and Ernie. Ernie is the leaseholder of the property. He has this lease until 2030, I believe, or somewhere close to 2030. And Haven Boat Works is a subtenant of that lease. What they're proposing is to build a new building. Haven, his business is doing really well, and they want to expand, so Ernie is working with them to expand that leasehold. When we went forward, we realized that they needed about 20 more feet, so it's not a very big addition. So to give you some ideas, they're presently leasing 10,063 square feet. The new survey proposes they want to lease 11,928 feet. It's an addition of 1,869 feet. Market rate for about 7 cents a foot. So that would be $130.55 more to lease this.
More money?
So what I've done is I've done a Google Earth map, and the yellow box kind of highlights the areas that they're looking at leasing. This is kind of no man's land, so it's not going to impede on their operations. It's not going to take away a boat space from them. In addition, Ernie has paid for a survey with Clark Land Office to actually survey the area. And I've highlighted the two areas that we're talking about increasing. The one on the right is 62 feet long. They're also going to relocate their woodshed. It's now right in the middle of their leasehold. So we're moving that over to the left side. You'll see that 40 foot by 16 feet that they're going to be relocating. I've checked with operations, and the operations has no problem. If you look at the Google Earth, there's already stuff there. They're just going to formally start leasing that property instead of having a bunch of stuff there.
It won't affect the crab lift operation. No. It doesn't impact any boat spaces that we normally use or anything. So,
Can we put back rent on that stuff that's already in?
Anyway, they've been working hard on the permitting process, and they're ready to start breaking dirt if you guys want to.
And this actually, I was down there yesterday, and they were forklifting lumber around, trying to kind of reorganize the site to get ready for this. And actually, Julia and company came and talked to us some months ago, kind of feeling out, is this, they weren't sure if they wanted to go ahead with it and everything. And after talking to us, I think their comfort level went up a little bit. We're very supportive of it. And, it's good for them, more money for us, and doesn't impact the travelers. So it's all positive in our mind.
Well, I'd move we just bump this down to immediate action.
I'm trying to figure out if there's any reason to have it go on. What are your feelings about having it go to a second reading? I kind of just don't want to get into the habit of doing everything. I mean, I want to give the public plenty of opportunity to respond, but this is
one of those examples. Yeah. The public really has no play in this. Some citizen going to say we don't want a local business to be successful.
Yeah. I guess it's not really a policy. It's just a...
Well, it's a good policy, but the same policy allows you to take immediate action.
Right. But what I'm saying is this thing we're talking about tonight is not a policy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Ernie, do you want to say anything?
No, except that I'm grateful for the collaboration and cooperation of the port. It's been altogether a happy interaction. So, as far as I know, there are no competing interests that would ask for that land that we're asking you to lease us at this time. It is the case that Haven Boatworks has purchased Shoreline Marine Diesel, and the addition to the building that's proposed offers them an opportunity to bring all their functions under one roof, which will improve their management efficiency. It does vacate a building that Shoreline currently occupies, which means that another business will be able to go undercover, possibly boat repair. That the building now occupied by Shoreline was originally built by the owner of Fleet Marine in order to begin his business in the mid-70s. So, it
was Gary?
What? Gary. Yeah. And it will... The construction of this addition will involve a substantial investment of capital. That means that more investment will be made in the port without the port having to deliver the funds. And at the conclusion of the lease, the buildings revert to the possession of the port.
And some local contractor gets to build the building and earn a little bit of money too.
So I guess in our last question, I was trying to figure out if we should do this tonight or not. I'm looking in the squares and the pictures here, and the only thing I would think would be a concern if, as they're a budding lease person, they would be concerned if they just found that we ran this by in one hearing. And I'm looking on the picture, and the one on the left-hand side, the smaller of the squares, has got a couple of buildings adjacent to it. So
those are those portable sheds that they bring in on trucks, and they're actually people that work in Townsend Bay Satellite Shelter. They've already been relocated, but those are just sheds.
This photo was taken quite some time ago.
Craftsman United. Those are just temporary sheds that they move around on skids.
I mean, is that property leased out then?
It's not leased out. Like I said, stuff is accumulated there, but that's not presently leased property.
So is it a roadway? I mean, a throughway for the travel lift to go on? Is that what it is?
It's just, like Jim said, it's no man's land.
It's just space that could be leased out.
Yeah, we don't put a boat there or anything, so.
So Ernie, are you guys ready to build now, or is that gonna be sometime future, or?
The project has been permitted and funded, so if you agree to the lease, I'll pick up the permit Monday morning, and the contractor is poised.
I suggest we let this.
The shovel is basically hanging over the dirt.
Okay, so that means that we have to have a motion to do it on a first reading instead of a second, and it has to be unanimous, so.
Which is on the table, Pete made the motion.
Oh, you made that motion, okay, all in favor?
Yeah, we got a second.
A second, all in favor?
Aye.
Since we're all in favor of that, I suspect we're all in favor, so let's propose that we approve that lease, so is there a second on that?
Yeah, I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Good. One down.
Thank you. Jim, may I bring one thing to the attention of the board? There's a large fabric-covered structure that was put in place by Townsend Bay Marine that's adjacent to this lease. It is possible that structure will be used on a regular basis as a sandblast shed. The noise generated by that shed exceeds, when it's being used for sandblasting, exceeds the OSHA limits for sound generation. It would damage hearing.
Inside the shed?
Inside the shed, and also as measured on my lease. Everybody who's using the shed is complying with OSHA. Nobody who's an employee of the people doing the sandblasting has done anything that's out of compliance. But the folks who occupy my buildings are adversely affected. If this has been a periodic event, hasn't been any trouble really, but more and more steel boats come into the port, and if it is used continuously as a sandblast shed, I'm likely to return to you and ask for mitigation. So it has nothing to do with it's just, I'm here, my tenants brought it to my attention, I wish to bring it to your attention just so if I come back, it's not unfamiliar. And you might want to think about it a little bit before I ever do have to come back.
Well, actually, while you're here, maybe you could explain, at least I'm having a hard time understanding. You're saying that they're all doing it according to OSHA standards, which means I assume that they have to have hearing protection or something like that to work in there.
Internally.
Right.
But OSHA does not govern the relationship between adjacent entities. In this case, Townsend Bay Marine or Craftsman United and Haven Boat Works. So, internally, everybody's in compliance. But they have an adverse effect on a neighboring business that rents from me. The port, if the port allows such a relationship to exist, where one tenant is adversely affecting another tenant, you may suffer a liability exposure. I don't know. Presumably you've got good legal help and they can answer that question.
We'll take it up with our legal counsel.
That's great.
Well, I suggest we get a handle on this before it becomes a legal matter. Right. Actually, and this what you're describing is a Department of Ecology matter because it's called noise pollution. And there are regulations that take care of that kind of thing. So what needs to happen is we and port staff need to get a handle on this before it escalates to a problem where where you're forced to do something about it.
This is the first complaint I've heard.
And we're not, you know, it's not our position that the shed wouldn't eventually be used as a sandblast shed, simply that it needs some kind of sound insulation that'll prevent it from generating an adverse effect on the neighbors.
Well, there's some other moving parts to that.
Yeah. Okay.
Bill.
Glad you brought it up.
Thank you very much.
No, it is, because it does have a potential for being a fairly...
And everybody for the lease has to obey all rules and regulations, federal, state, and local, so we will endeavor.
Bless but you, guaranteed, Ernie, you got to move that old Chris Craft boat or you're not going to get your new building in there.
It's gone. There's a nice new tug there.
Really?
I want to think that's good. It looks like we were watering that day. I think that was taken last summer sometime.
Okay, moving on to item B, the EV electronic vehicle tourism discussion.
I was not at that one.
Right. Jim and I will discuss it. Jim, we'll let Jim go first, and I'll fill in the blanks.
So, Steve and I have been members of the Energy Lunch Program. One of the topics that has come up is how the port can work to help with electric vehicle tourism, to bring people here who have electric cars. And we've had a long discussion about what can be done without spending any money. We had a meeting in this room last week that was very productive with the state. We had a person from WASDA, we had a person from State Department of Commerce.
And from Ecology, too.
Yeah. And it was a great meeting, a discussion that small communities like ours don't have funding mechanisms to do this, but it's important to get involved in this some way. That generated a discussion on funds that would be available from either grant writing and or from manufacturers of electric vehicles, which I think is probably the best idea, going to Nissan and saying, hey, you know, we've got 23 Leafs in Port Townsend. How about forking over some money for charging stations? Anyway, great discussion. But before staff spent any time on it, we wanted to talk to the commission. Does the commission wish us to spend time on something like this? Obviously, it's important for us to bring people to the community. We have an opportunity in front of our new admin building. We have three-phase power right there at the huge transformer on the corner. That there's not many locations that have three-phase power that big that we could actually have charging stations there. But it's going to take a fair amount of staff work from Eric and my point of view to actually make this happen. So we just wanted to make sure that the commission was on board for us to do that, and that's kind of the discussion we're there.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention that I've been involved in the Energy Lunch, and the Energy Lunch is primarily focused on energy, but the offshoot of energy is that anytime you get any energy jobs, it's jobs. So it really ends up being energy economic development with energy as a twist. And we've had some really excellent projects started. Well, a good example is the biochar that came from an Energy Lunch where Francesco talked about biochar there, and it ended up being a project that we ended up utilizing. And so the Energy Lunch, I think, is a really valuable thing that has got the port some really good benefit, and I think this would be a good one. I've been kind of working on a lot of it on my own time and not, well, you know, just reporting on it to the commission, but this is something that is going to take some staff time, so I wanted to not try to skirt things, and Jim also not want to skirt things and get staff commissioned to me, yeah, we want to do that, or no, we don't. So this is the first
one. Well, I don't own a Leaf. I know, like, the co-op guys all have Leafs, and charging stations are key. I mean, it really, you can't go very far without them, so I can see that being pretty utilized. Any chance to, can you charge for charging stations?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's what we would be talking about, a system where people could put their credit card in and actually charge for the power.
Yeah.
So, we're looking at something that really doesn't cost the port anything except
staff time.
Yeah.
Well, much staff time.
Well, I don't know right now, but I would bet probably over the next 6 months, maybe 150 hours.
That's quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's significant. But we also get some good publicity out of it, too.
And the thing that we're looking at doing, by the way, is, like I said, you can charge for it. Because the charging station we're looking at here is what they call a quick charge station. That'll charge a Leaf up in a half an hour. And so that's how come this part of this tourism is, because and there's a lot of Leafs out. They're very popular cars. If you live in Seattle, though, you want to come over here, all you can do is come over here. You can't go home. So that kind of puts the kibosh on tourism. So there's slow charging stations that Andy Cochran's been doing a good job of putting some around town. They take 5 hours to charge up. Or there's the fast charge, and they're usually traditionally people don't charge for those. Then there's the fast charge station that'll do it in a half an hour.
And that's where the three-phase comes in?
Exactly. And that's the one that you can charge for. That's the one that will get us on the map. There's groups that have electric cars, and they have rallies, and they say, well, where do we go? And if you have charging stations available, they come here. If you don't have them, they don't.
Well, the other location is down at Point Hudson. Tom that runs Doc's restaurant, he bumps out a Tesla. And we had talked about the transformer right next to his deck there in the parking lot, and we talked about putting charging stations there.
But that's single phase.
But that's single phase, but still, it's...
Doesn't the Maritime Center have a three-phase station? Yeah.
They have a single phase also.
Yeah.
Andy Cochran just finished.
But even single phase, you know, if you're going to eat and everything, where you're going to spend an hour, hour and a half, then suddenly that's...
It would be cool to combine that with Kevin's abilities on the website, because that all ties in with Google, and now you're going to be recognized as having that charging station. That's going to be a Google thing.
This is such a central location here with the bus stop right there. You can plug your car in, you can go to the bus. I was concerned, and I asked the WASDOT people about people that plug in and then leave for 3 hours. And they say that if you charge, they can do that, but you get charged by the hour. So it might cost you $50 to leave your car there for 3 hours, which is an incentive for them to only charge for a half hour and move on. But it's a great central location here, I think. It's only a first reading. We don't need a decision today. Yeah. Wanted to let you know what we're talking about, and just let us know if you'd like us to.
How many stations are you talking about?
Two.
You keep in mind, we don't get paid by the hour, so this will not impact any other port work.
Yeah.
We have to work extra hours to get something else done, then we work extra hours.
It'd be interesting to see a rally come up here with two charging stations.
Yeah, they're all beating up each other.
Well, actually, it's an interesting thing, because that's the whole point of a fast charging station. They have a transformer with two cords sticking out of it, and the guy comes up in the one parking spot, puts his cord in. Another guy comes up in the other spot, puts his cord in. When this is done, it automatically switches over to charging the other one. By that time, this guy leaves. Another guy comes in there and hooks his cord on, and it switches back. So it just sits there and switches back and forth. And that sounds like a perfect scenario in a perfect world, but Andy says that it actually happens like that on the nearest station to us, which is in Silverdale. He says you go up there and there's going to be an empty spot because it's just been vacated by the last guy, and they just switches the cords and it works like clockwork.
Unless a gas car parks there.
Yeah.
No, that would get towed. Okay, so moving on, the North Olympic Development Council.
Real quick, just to keep you apprised, you know, the PDD and the RC&D that y'all hear me talking about going to those meetings, and Steve's on that too. They're in the process of dissolving those two entities and combining them. The new name is the North Olympic Development Council, Balham and Jefferson County. Last week we had a retreat to talk about strategic planning and what the new mission statement should look like and all that. And tomorrow we're going to meet again over in Blinn to kind of review the results of that and go forward. So, but it was well attended. A lot of county commissioners, board commissioners, you know, Chambers of Commerce, Peter Quinn was there, Catherine Burrell. So there's a lot of, you know, the sense was with the new organizations, the chance to be reborn, a lot of energy to kind of, let's get going with economic development here. So that's it. More to follow.
Okay, the New Day lease.
So as you're aware, New Day Fisheries has been on a month-to-month lease for over a year now. We've prepared the lease for them, and we've been back and forth. Scott came in this week and said he's ready to sign this. I want you to read through this because it's not our standard lease. Two things that are unique to this. One is the top, which is a license agreement. So we acknowledge that the pier over there is in pretty bad shape. So one says license agreement up on top. So what Eric has put together is a license agreement that is only for 1 year. It's $100 for the year, just for the use of that pier. It can be terminated at any point. Should an engineer determine there's fail safes in this license agreement, that an engineer determines it's unsafe to run a forklift, the license agreement will be terminated. So that's that part of it. The second is the building and land lease. Scott wanted 20 years. He wanted a 10-year lease with a 10-year option. Staff really doesn't believe that building's going to be standing 20 years from now, but this is what he asked for. But if you pay close attention to item eight really outlines what happens if there is a problem. So again, if an engineer comes and says that this building is going to collapse, at least it's terminated. So there's a lot of fail safes that, again, Eric has put in here. He's run it by Carolyn, I know. So take a look at it. It's a first reading. I told Scott that we wouldn't know for a couple weeks yet whether we were going to approve this new lease. But he's happy with it, and I think our companies are happy with it also.
Yeah, we just didn't want to get ourselves backed into a corner where suddenly, you know, a facility is unusable, and then we're faced with having to put $1 million into fixing it and never recouping our investment again. And I think strategic planning wise, yeah, we really need to look at that entire spit over there as to, you know, is that the best and highest use in the future? You know, right now, this is a good use, but the infrastructure is very, very old, and at some point, we may not want to maintain it as is. So.
Well, this remove a lot of product through there and employ quite a number of people. My understanding, we're 20 to 40 plus.
Yeah, it depends on the season. Yeah, and I talked to Scott, I talked to him the night we did Doug Lockhart's farewell. And, you know, when we built the heavy hauler, we built that pier to be used for loading and offloading. And, you know, so if we have to close the old wood pier over here, there'll be a little bit of inconvenience, but it won't stop his operation. The building is a different question. But again, long-term planning of the port, you know, maybe an activity of that sort, it should be relocated down at the far end. You know, make that the commercial end of the port and make this more of the softer recreational commercial end. You know, just a thought. You know, we're talking 10 years from now or more, so it's not something we got to decide right away. But
I do have to say, as a tenant, in the 14 years I've been here, Scott has never asked me for one thing. If the roof's leaking, he fixes it. He's been an ideal tenant.
The only thing we had in the we supported him was we, I remember going to the city to, he needed his water valve increased from a 3/4 inch to a 1.5 or something like that, so he could get more water into his facility. And it took us a few meetings with the city to get the city to agree to that, but again, Scott paid for it. And, yeah.
So you said that the heavy hauler was built to take care of the loading and unloading that like they're doing there now?
Unloading, that's, you know, setting mass. You see it being used all the time for different
things. So but right now on that pier, he has a big ice machine. So I assume that has to dump into boats, right? I mean, they fill boats up from the, so would that be able to be moved down there?
No, there's no room for the ice machine. No. But they could still do it over here. They could just move it on shore.
So that's not part of the dock that's failing, the ice machine?
Well, it is, but they can move the actual container on
back,
shore.
Back to shore.
Because all the ice is funneled through a drop system.
Yeah,
a
conveyor belt.
So they go along the conveyor belt out to the boats. So, but we couldn't accommodate that ice machine out there.
How'd you guys come up with $1 million? That seems light on the insurance.
That's kind of our standard. Please, sir.
Why would you want to charge them more?
Well, I'm just thinking, I mean, there is, if that dock fails, if a torque lift goes out and the dock fails and the guy falls on the boat and people are killed, there's a lot of exposure there. I mean, it's not like you're dealing with a very structurally sound.
Well, that's why we're going to
structure
inspect it on a regular basis and wrote in the lease that we can cancel that portion of the agreement. And we become uneasy with the structure.
Okay, well, this will be something to mull over for a while. Any other discussion on this?
Nope.
Okay, so that takes care of the agenda. Now we're going to go to staff comments.
Seth, anything?
No, thank you.
Amy?
I don't have anything.
If you need Amy for anything for the next week and a half, don't ask.
Where are you going?
No fair.
Still, I'll be signing that petition.
Tomorrow?
Sue? Sue with her new car? Vacations, new cars, geez.
I got nothing.
I have a new car and I'm not going on vacation, but. RCO. I talked to Sarah at the RCO today, and on our issue about commercial use. And they got with the Assistant Attorney General for the state, who advised the RCO that the tribal usage of boat ramps, not just ours, but all of them, including state, fish and wildlife, et cetera, state parks. There's abundant court cases where their tribal fishing areas have to be honored, and they do not consider tribal commercial use of a boat ramp as against the RCO covenants.
Oh, good.
So we have that. But then I said, you know, what about can I charge a fee for the commercial use? And she referred, and it shows you there, to manual number 4. And it's a typical state regulatory manual. You got to read it 4 times and you still don't understand what it says. But it essentially says you can have different rate structures, but no additional rate can be more than twice what your regular recreational rate is. So if we charge $10 for your standard recreational fisherman, you can't charge more than 20 bucks for any other use. However, and I've already talked to Seth about it, and Sarah at the RCO suggested we talk to her, and it says in the email, suggest consulting with your legal counsel. Not really the tribes, that the commercial buyers with the panel refrigerated trucks, they're not tribal. You know, they're commercial, non-tribal, you know, they come up from Tacoma and purchase the product and then take it back and process it, and you buy it in Safeway and wherever else you buy your seafood. They're not really using the ramp. You know, they're parking their trucks out here, they try to bring the product up, take it, weigh it, and make the financial transaction. So in my mind, legal counsel, that is different from using the boat ramp. It's almost like any private commercial enterprise coming onto port property using the taxpayers' infrastructure to make a personal gain. So why can't we charge them a fee with the promise that whatever we collect we'll keep in the boat ramp fund for future maintenance and upkeep of the ramps? So that's the question.
Is the parking lot paid with dollars that come from RCM?
No, we did that ourselves. So we don't need an answer tonight, but think on it on the way back tonight. So, but anyway, if you want to go talk to the tribes and see if they're willing to donate a little bit of money to the ramp project, I think we're okay to do that.
Yeah, I think Jim and I started that process. I think we'll go finish it.
And the only other thing I wanted to bring up, I think Sue brought them over. I put them in your boxes early today. Jim and I sat down with Peter Quinn and Dave Timmons from the city yesterday and had a really good meeting. And this is on the whole IDC thing. And what this packet is, it's a bunch of information I put together on what the Port of Bellingham does, the Port of Chehalis, both of which still have their IDC authority, but also some questions and answers about these types of bonds, and some information from the Washington Economic Development Finance Authority, which has the same authority as we do under an IDC to issue the same type of bonds to a private company, and also a Small Business Administration. Besides Pete Langley, another local company is interested in this authority. And so we wanted to sit down, EDC, city, and us first to kind of get our ducks together, and essentially Timmons is going to write up a draft. We thought it'd be a good idea if we joined forces, bringing the city's economic development powers and to the table, combined with ours, and create, some places they call them enterprise zones. You know, like up on Howard Street, up by the first traffic circle, all the port property would be in the zone where a private enterprise can come to the city and the port for assistance. You know, they want to build a new building, expand, buy equipment, whatever. So we're putting that together, probably be a few weeks, you know, bring it back to you. In here, and I think we need to put this on next the next agenda, I borrowed heavily from the Port of Bellingham's paperwork, and I'll give them credit for it. But I've got a draft application form in there that Pete Langley or this other business would fill out to start the process. So I think we need to kind of see if we're all comfortable with that. I'm recommending we charge $1,000 application fee, only to be paid if the IDC process is successful. So we probably, since that's kind of a fee, we probably ought to, you know, adopt that. And I don't know, but we might need to do a resolution on all this. That's something we need to talk, perhaps talk to the legal about. So, that's it.
We actually have another thing.
Oh, the workshop?
Yeah, and also the April 8th meeting.
Yeah, the workshop.
And the FAA.
Yeah. I'm going to the FAA conference, which is 6, 7, and 8 April. So I would not be here for the regular meeting, which isn't a problem. Jim could handle that. However, the workshop that morning, we could still hold it, but I'd really like to have David Goldsmith come talk to us all and kind of review the bidding on our last retreat before we formalize the date and all that and agenda for the May retreat. Goldsmith is out of town that week, and so I was thinking maybe one of the options is just do the regular business meeting on the 8th, and then either do a special workshop a few days, you know, the next week when he's back in town, or at our evening meeting, maybe that afternoon, do a workshop, say at like 3 o'clock or something. So I think it's important that we sit down with David and kind of go over that, mm-hmm. rather than...
That'd be a good idea.
Yeah, he put a few notes together, but they're really rough draft notes, and I wanted to sit down with him first to make sure we're aligned, and then, you know, have him talk to the commission, so...
Seems like you'd want to do that sooner in the month if we were going to... We went to the fourth Wednesday, we'd be going to tell you on May.
That's what I was thinking, too, maybe have a special workshop. He's going to be back on tax day, you know, whatever day it
is. Is he going to be here next week?
No, he's already gone. So. Okay. Yeah. Let's look at the calendar, and if you're up for a workshop, you know, earlier, then we'll pick the first available date.
Fine with me.
Yeah.
That'd be good, yeah.
That's it.
That's it. I think it's time for public comments. Yes. Any public comments? Okay. Commissioner comments.
My only one is I just would like to remember Diane Shostak. She passed away this week. And if you didn't know her, she was a wonderful, wonderful force on the peninsula. She promoted the peninsula aggressively for, what,
8 years.
What's that?
8 years.
8 years, yeah.
Director of the North Olympic Tourism.
Yeah, and she battled cancer for years and finally succumbed to that a couple days ago. And so anyway, she was a good friend and she'll be missed. She did a lot of great things regarding tourism. And just last year, she was opening the door with China in a really big way for promoting the Olympic Peninsula. So she'll be missed.
I have nothing.
Okay, and basically my report would have been the energy lunch, which you've already discussed, so that's all I have. So we have no call for an executive session, correct? So this meeting, the next meeting is going to be a workshop. No, we're not going to have a workshop on the 8th. It's going to be a business meeting.
At 1 o'clock.
At 1 o'clock. So this meeting is adjourned.